Are you confused about real food and what's healthy and good for the planet? Do you need the facts about local, organic, and sustainable food? Well, get ready to change the way you eat. Get ready for The Appropriate Omnivore with Aaron Zober.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. I'm your host, Aaron Zober, covering lifestyles in the world of real food. Part of being an appropriate omnivore is eating the animals from nose to tail. This includes organ meats. My guest today, James Berry, has a great way to incorporate more organ meats into your diet with a brand called Pluck, which offers seasonings containing 100% grass-fed beef organ seasonings. James, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Aaron.
I'm pleased to have you here. This is a topic that I've wanted to do for a while. We've actually not done a specific show about organ meats. I've certainly had guests that have talked about the benefits of them, and I've known about your product for a few years now. I've had guests actually mention it on the show, so you've been on my wish list of people that I've wanted on here. And when I saw you at the Wise Traditions Conference a few weeks ago and you said you'd like to be on my show, my eyes lit up because this is really something that I wanted to do. So I was very pleased to hear your excitement about coming on here.
Yeah, thank you. I'm honored. And I still kind of get tickled and just amazed as a food manufacturer, someone who's created a food product. You start in your kitchen, your home kitchen. You make it for yourself and for your immediate people. And then I still just get in awe that I see all these people buying it. And like you just said, that you heard other people talking about it and then you had heard about it. And we didn't know each other before this. And so it's like, I'm just always blown away by the reach and that this little idea has grown so big. And I'm excited for it to reach even more people. So I'm just grateful to people like you for shouting out about it and having me as a guest and for all those people that have already purchased and looking forward to reaching those that haven't.
Oh, thank you. And what I love about the Wise Traditions Conference is this is really where a lot of products get their start before they're in the retail trade shows. They've been at Wise Traditions first. And so when I go to these conferences, I always go there with the expectation that I know that a number of these products then will be really big. So there's the excitement of seeing what ones will one day be major names in the natural CPG industry.
Well, I hope that's us.
I think it is. I think it's already started because you've been around for a couple of years. This was my first Wise Traditions conference since 2019. I know you've exhibited at a couple of them before, and I already see your name exploding. You definitely have a product that I think is going to be big in a few years. I think in the world of Wise Traditions and other ancestral groups, paleo, keto, I think it already is. But I think that it's definitely going bigger.
I'll take that belief. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes. So how did you come up with the idea to found Pluck and make organ meat seasonings in the first place?
Well, I started as a professional chef. I've been doing it now about 20 years. And my lens as a chef has always been about how can I make comfort foods healthier? It's always been what it's about. I realized that that's what we tend to gravitate to as humans. And I just wanted to see if I could help people. And then skip forward. I'm now a father. Previously, I was not working with organ meats very much. I didn't grow up eating organ meats. I knew about them, but I just didn't really go beyond making pâtés, really. And so then skip ahead to about 11 years ago, I became a father. And then I had my second child about 7 years ago. And it was right around the second child that I was a stay-at-home dad at that point because I had a meal delivery service and I had sold that business. And we had moved out of LA. And so we were now in Portland, Oregon. I was a stay-at-home dad. And I was getting my health back because anyone that's an entrepreneur will know that you put it all in your business and your intention might be to help healthy people, but really the person that's hurting the most is you. You're the one that's not being healthy. I wasn't eating well. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't exercising. So me being a stay-at-home dad was really getting that health back because I was able to nap with my newborn and just in general, just slow down and take care of myself. And in that process, I got my creativity back. And that's when I got this idea for, well, wait a second, organ meats are the most nutrient-dense food on the planet. We call them Mother Nature's multivitamin. And there's really three reasons, at least that I identified, why people aren't eating them. It's the associated taste. People think they're gross or icky. They don't know how to cook them. They don't want to touch them. They're just unfamiliar with that whole culinary process of working with them. And then the third is that they don't know where to source them. And so once I identified those three hurdles, that's what I set out to solve. I feel confident that we did. Pluck is 5 freeze-dried powdered organ meats. It's liver, heart, kidney, spleen, and pancreas. It's got organic spices and herbs added to it. The spices and herbs help to offset the taste. Because it's like a powder that you can sprinkle on anything, no different than a seasoning, you don't need to know how to cook. You can put it on to-go food. And then you don't need to worry about sourcing. We're sourcing from 100% grass-fed New Zealand cows. In New Zealand, it's an island. They're able to eat green grass year-round. They're very conscious about what they do to the animals because this is their main export. And more importantly, they even allow for the whole animal. You can get brain in New Zealand. You can get lung. You can get testicles, ovaries. You can get literally every part of the animal. Whereas in the US, it's much harder to get access to. It's easy to get access to if you have a one-on-one relationship with your rancher. Harder to get access to if you want to sell the product with a USDA approval.
Things were similar to me with organ meats. I certainly did not grow up eating them. When were you first introduced to organ meats?
So we did eat whole chickens when I was growing up. My dad owned a grocery store that had a butcher area. Back then, people forget this. So we're so much more disconnected from our food sources now. But back then, you didn't see just chicken thighs for sale. You know what I mean? You saw a whole chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And there was definitely no skinless, boneless. There was none of that. You saw a whole chicken. And then the butcher would chop it up for you, basically. And that's what my dad did. So he would butcher the carcass. So inevitably, you would get the organs and went on the neck and those parts of the chicken. And so my mom would always cook them. And then sometimes we would eat them. I do remember eating them as a kid, but almost by mistake or something like that. Like it was on the plate and I didn't know what it was. And I eat it and I'm like, wait. And it was mostly texture. The flavor wasn't so bad, but it was more the texture. I'm like, wait, this isn't muscle meat. It always threw me off a little bit. But my mom loved eating chicken organs. She grew up eating liver and onions, but that was really the limit of my exposure. Otherwise, she didn't make pâtés. She wasn't really much of a cook. So then my next exposure was when I was in culinary school and we learned about Wise Traditions. Yeah, Nourishing Traditions Cookbook was one of the books that we studied from.
Oh, wow. For me, it was very much Weston A. Price Foundation, learning about the health benefits of organ meats, which has got me going to it. And I'll be honest, organ meats such as liver are still a little strong that I'm glad we have products like yours where you can incorporate into a seasoning or things I do. Sometimes I like the ground beef and organ meat blends. Other organs are easier for me to eat. I do love heart, for instance, but liver is still a hard one for me to incorporate in my diet, even knowing all the benefits. So that's why I'm glad that we have brands like yours, or I have local farms that will sell a organ meat blend. I do a lot of cooking myself, so I will a lot of times just do a mix of chicken liver and ground beef.
Yeah, the chicken, I think poultry is a really good animal to start with if you're easing into organs, particularly mm-hmm. the chicken hearts. They're very mild and you can incorporate them into things that already have flavor or into ground meats really easily as long as you keep the ratios down. So maybe to a pound of meat, you're using about 4 chicken hearts, not too much, but chop them up real fine or grind them and no one will know. I always tell people treat them like mushrooms. If you're making like a spaghetti sauce, just chop them up. And you would only usually add maybe 3 to 4 mushrooms in that sauce. So just do the same with the chicken hearts.
Yeah, so the chicken hearts are ones that I can actually eat, not ground up. Even the chicken liver is somewhat a little easier, like a chicken liver pate. Chicken liver and chicken organs definitely don't have as strong of a taste as the beef liver and beef organs do. Would you say, though, that there's more nutrients in beef organ meats than chicken organ meats and poultry organ meats?
Yeah, it's for sure. They've done studies. Yeah, it's much more nutritious to eat the organs from a cow. Lamb also has good amounts of nutrients. Elk, deer, they all have much more than poultry does. Poultry is one of those animals that it really depends on where you're buying it. If you're buying it conventionally, it's not going to be very nutritious. And then the other thing is what the bird was fed. So the breed, how it was raised, what it was fed, that's going to dictate how nutritious it is, but it will never be as nutritious as a cow.
Yes, I would agree with that for a number of reasons. There's more nutrients in the cow and organ meats of other ruminants, but as we're talking about gateway organ meats, chicken organ meats, chicken liver, chicken hearts, they are a good way to get started. And you can be someone, you might be a little like me, that it's even still a little harder to eat the full organs when it's from a cow or a lamb versus a chicken. So that's where certainly your products come in. Now, currently you sell all organs from the cow. Could you see yourself expanding into organs from other animals?
Absolutely. That's our goal. We're working on getting some poultry organs so we can do that. Because there's definitely people that don't eat ruminant animals like cow or goat or sheep. They don't eat them. But then there's also, and we're more and more seeing this, people that have gotten Lyme disease. Some of them are having issues where they can't eat any beef products. Their body reacts to it after they've gotten a type of Lyme disease. So it's interesting. I'd never heard of that before, but in the last 5 years, I've been meeting more and more people like that. And so I would love to be able to serve those people as well, because really the key is this is something I believe is necessary. So if you can't do beef or don't want to do beef, then I want to get you the poultry organs. And if you can't do poultry and you only do fish, then I want to get you whole fish. You know what I mean? But the idea is that our mission is to try to support people in eating whole animal or whole fish, like the whole product, not just the flesh.
Yes, absolutely. So targeting towards all types of animal eaters. There's really no way you can target towards vegans, but to the pescatarians and polotarians. And that is interesting what you said about Lyme disease. I hadn't heard about that either. I met a number of people for various reasons they can't have beef, but a lot of that times they can have other ruminants such as lamb and buffalo.
Yeah, it's fascinating. This is a little off topic, but Lyme and mold are two reactions or symptoms that I believe are just going to increase over time, and we're going to see more and more issues around those. So I think everyone should be mindful of those too. If you have ailments or chronic illness that is just nagging and not going away, I would definitely recommend getting tested for either of those two, because it's just more people are getting it or have it than we realize. And it's not just on the East Coast, it's spreading across the whole US.
So obviously health is a very important aspect of Pluck. What benefits have you seen with your family and with customers from including more organ meats into their diet?
Yeah, it's been fascinating because there was no way for me to know that we would see all of these different benefits. But I've gotten feedback. Father told me that their daughter had been born with some skin issues, had had them for most of her life. And they knew about organ meats, the benefits of organ meats, but they didn't have a really clean way of getting it into their daughter because she was young enough where she would refuse certain foods. So they learned about Pluck. They started using Pluck in her food, and her skin issues, he said, are relatively gone. So that was amazing. He was like, I am so sold on organ meats now and your product. And he was like, I'm going to shout from the rooftop about this, because he was just, as a father, so excited to see his daughter feeling better. I mean, that's ultimately the best compliment. And that is why I did this. As I mentioned, is as a parent, you want to get the best, most nutrient-dense foods into your kids. The reality, though, is that they may not eat them. So if we can give them these nutrient-dense foods in ways that they will eat, then we feel like we've accomplished huge goals, huge things. And so that's a huge benefit, is just now you can get these nutrient-dense foods in your kids. You can put it on popcorn. My kids put it on their toast, rice. They put it on potatoes. They put it on anything they eat, pizza, and they love it. They ask for it. So that's a huge, huge win. We've also heard people's energy levels increasing, better sleep. This is a cool one. We've seen parents tell us and practitioners tell us that the kids' palates change. So kids that are very picky become more adventurous. They're willing to try new foods. And I believe it's the umami that's in the organ meat that's helping to expand their palate. So that's a really cool one. Hair, thicker hair. I believe in this concept of like supports like. And actually at the Wise Traditions Conference, this was cool talk. I'm always talking about like supports like, that if you want to help your heart, you eat heart. If you want to help your liver, you eat liver. That kind of concept.
Yes, Natasha Campbell McBride, I was amazed when she said that. That was very interesting.
Yeah. So this is something that's been around a long time. I'm not inventing it at all. But I had a conversation with someone at the Wise Traditions where they were telling me about how there were some people that had lung issues. There's this person that had lung issues for a while, was going to doctors. They couldn't figure it out. They tried different things, didn't work. And then someone suggested, hey, why don't you eat lung and see if that supports it? And 2 days after eating it, their lung issues were gone.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that blew me away.
Me too, just hearing that.
So I'm a big believer in that. And to that effect, we are actually going to be expanding the organs that are in our blends. So as I mentioned, we have liver, heart, kidney, spleen, and pancreas right now. Five organs, we're actually going to expand it to include lung and bone marrow.
Oh, bone marrow is amazing. So I can't wait to taste that.
Yeah, we're going to do that with our blend. So that will be in everything we sell. But then we also are going to be making brain available. We're not going to add it to our blend, but we're going to make a separate blend that has brain in it for people that want to get that into their diet as well. Because that's one that you just cannot get it in the U.S.
No.
Unless you have a relationship with a rancher and they're doing it under the table, it's illegal to purchase it in the U.S. The USDA has it on a list that they won't allow you to sell it. I've heard that actually who it's going to is pharmaceutical companies. That's what I've heard, which is atrocious if that's true.
What a waste.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that they're not letting us eat it when we know it's extremely beneficial. We know our ancestors ate it. And then they're giving it to pharmaceuticals who are probably using it in their pharmaceuticals. And that's what's so ironic is that we are a nutrient deficient society, but we're not a calorie deficient society, right? We're an overweight society for the most part. So that tells us that it's not about that we're not eating enough food, we're eating the wrong foods. And then we're turning around and spending $40 billion or more dollars on the supplement industry. And so we're eating nutrient deficient food. We're sidelining the foods that are nutrient sufficient, like nutrient-rich organ meats. We're literally giving them to our pets. We're throwing them away. We're giving them to other industry, but we're not actually eating them ourselves. And then if that's true, the brains and some of the other glands are going to pharmaceuticals. That means they're putting them in the pharmaceuticals that we're turning around and buying because we're not getting the nutrients in our food. Like, it's just kind of the definition of insanity to me.
Me too. Yes, I remember hearing about the pets because I do sustainable meat both for health and also for environmental benefits. And one of the things that I said, especially with the criticism of, is there enough meat to feed everyone, is I'm about eating every part of the animal. And said also that because I'll eat every part so they don't just get thrown away. And people say, well, they put that in pet food. And we hear that, I'm like, oh, well, that's a waste. Humans should be enjoying them because of the great benefits of it.
Absolutely.
You're talking a little bit earlier about the umami taste of it. And as I hear that, I think about how, as today with so many seasonings, there's the whole flavor packets and MSG in them. Do you see your products as an alternative to these MSG-filled spices and seasonings?
Absolutely. Yeah, to your point, a lot of ultra-processed foods, they're adding MSG to brighten the food flavor because basically it's glutamate that's in MSG. Now there's glutamate in organ meats as well. It's in meat too. So there is natural forms of glutamate. But what they find is it has that umami flavor. Umami is the fifth unique taste. So we have sour, bitter, salty, sweet. And then umami was discovered in Japan. And they find that when they add MSG to these products, it adds that umami. And umami is best described as savory. It's slightly meaty or savory. And so you add that element to any product. So it increases the taste of the other flavors. And then it triggers that part in your brain where you want to eat more, that addictive part in your brain. So they're trying to get you in two ways when they add MSG to products, to add flavor and then to trigger addiction, to make you eat it more. So I'm finding that on a certain level, that is what's happening with Pluck. Families get it and the kids can't stop eating it. They love it. I've gotten told that kids cry when they're out, things like that. But to me, it speaks to, yes, it's delicious, but it also speaks to, I think our bodies have innate knowledge of what they need. If I put salt on your tongue, your body tells you exactly whether it wants more or less right away. It's immediate communication. If you were to swallow a salt tablet, it would be delayed response. 15 to 20 minutes later, why am I bloated? I got too much salt, right? So one is guesswork when we swallow our nutrients, but when we eat our nutrients, our body communicates its needs. So we're working with basically our God-given biological process that our bodies are designed to do. And so when that's the case, I find that people react like that. They react like, oh my gosh, this is so good, I need more. So it's not necessarily addiction like you would find with alcohol or drugs. It's more of ancestral addiction, like your body is finally getting these nutrients in the form that it most will absorb. And so it wants more of them. It craves more of that. But by eating it, your body will also tell you when it's done. That's the power of eating nutrient-dense foods. Now, it is confusing to our body because basically historically flavor represented nutrition in the wild, right? So if something had flavor, it meant it also had nutrition. Now our bodies are manipulated. So you buy something from the grocery store, if it's ultra processed and has artificial or natural flavors, it tastes like it has lots of flavor. But if it's ultra processed, it probably doesn't have any nutrients. And so then it's like, your body's confused. Your body thinks, oh, this tastes like strawberries. I'm going to get nutrients or whatever flavor it is. And then your body doesn't get them. And so it just keeps eating, waiting to be satiated, and it never comes. And then suddenly you've eaten the whole bag or the whole box, whatever it is. And so it's very confusing. We're up against huge issues when we're eating ultra processed foods.
I think a big part of the waiting to be satiated actually is a lack of saturated fat. I find that incorporating more saturated fat into my diet makes me more satiated.
Oh, absolutely. The idea being that if you're eating a piece of fruit, eat it with some fat. Absolutely.
Yes, that's a big thing I've seen with holistic nutritionists is always eat fruit with a protein.
Yeah. Now, there's some people that will talk about how they digest differently. When I was studying in culinary school, when we were studying nutrition, they talked about how you really want to eat fruit alone because it digests in like 30 minutes versus an hour and a half with vegetables and proteins. But honestly, that's something I learned 20 years ago. And nowadays, you hear a lot of people talking about how if you're going to eat fruit, you want to eat it right before bed because the carbohydrates will support you sleeping well. So I think if anything, these kind of nutritional guidelines or advice that we see or trends that we see, they do change a lot because obviously you only know what you know, and we're constantly learning new things. And we're also constantly wrong about certain things. So I'm just a huge advocate of, well, see what works for you.
Yes.
If you're eating fruit and it works for you to add coconut butter or cashew butter or whatever it is, nuts or some oils, whatever it is to it, and it's working, then good, then keep doing it.
Yes.
Your body knows what it needs.
Yes, we do hear a lot of conflicting advice about nutrition. And would you say that one size does not fit all when it comes to this?
Absolutely. And that's really ultimately why I'm advocating people eating their nutrition versus swallowing, because when you eat it, it allows for bioindividuality. That's what we're talking about. And when you swallow it, you're assuming that all sizes are the same. You read the back of the bottle of encapsulated organ meats, and it says take six. And it's like, I don't think we all need six. I'm not even sure who came up with that.
And when we have a product like Pluck, eating the Pluck seasoning on the food is much more savory than just taking an encapsulated organ pill.
Absolutely. And you get to control it. You get to control and listen to your body. And it's really what I'm advocating is I really want us to get back to identifying what our bodies need. Someone wants a self-assessment. Now, sometimes you need testing to assess that because the modern world is so confusing. But Bill Schindler, who is an archaeologist, doctor of archaeology, he wrote a book called Eat Like a Human. And he has a great quote where he says, we are the only species in the world that looks to someone else to tell us what to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you something right there. It tells you how far removed we are from our food. So we are the only species of a lot of species, right? The only one that doesn't know instinctively what to eat.
Yes. So I want to go back a little bit. You were talking about where you source the grass-fed beef organs from. You're talking about getting it from New Zealand and from Ireland. And you're saying one reason is it's hard to get all the organs from farms in the U.S. So that's obviously one thing that you look for when sourcing is being able to get all of the organs that you want. Are there other things, too, that you look for when sourcing in terms of regenerative and grass-fed practices?
Yeah, there is definitely confusion out there. But a lot of people don't realize that all cows are grass-fed.
Yes.
They all start out grass-fed, and they're grass-fed for a good chunk of their lives. The difference is, are they grass-finished? So that's when we say 100% grass-fed, we're saying from beginning to end. Now, even that is a misunderstanding, though, as well. What kind of grass are they being fed? If it's in the U.S., it's very hard to find green grass year-round. So what a lot of the ranchers who I would say are doing it right, in my opinion, what they do is after they've harvested their grasses or their hay, they'll then ferment the grass or the hay so that it will support the bioavailability of those nutrients. I've talked to many ranchers who do that, and that's going to make it way healthier for the animals who are 100% grass-fed to get nourished year-round. Because a lot of people don't realize grass-fed or pastured animals is, in my judgment, the way an animal should be eating. That's how they would naturally be eating,
mine
right?
Too.
However, a lot of ranchers don't know how to properly raise grass-fed cows. So there's this thought that, well, if I buy a cow and I just let it roam on the pasture, then it's, and it's eating, that's the only thing I feed it, then I'm doing my job, right? It doesn't work like that, because the cows would cover a lot more property than you probably have. They would be moving around, following their instincts around which grasses to be eaten. And if you have limited grasses on your land, they're probably not getting the nutrients they need. And I've talked to some agricultural vets who have shared with me that they will go out to farms to support farmers that are in every way, grain fed or grass fed. And they'll tell me they've been to a lot of grass fed farmers that have ill cows, that don't realize that their cows are ill, not nourished, and they're not healthy because of it. So I guess all to say is that not all 100% grass fed is the same, that you really do want to talk to the farmer. If you can, go visit the farm, look at the cows. If they look emaciated, that's not good. They should look just as healthy as grain fed, I guess, if you were to say grain fed are healthy looking, but they should look robust is kind of what I'm saying. They shouldn't look emaciated or weak in any way.
Yes, there are lots of different ways to do grass fed. What I think we're seeing is that grass fed is a start, and the Weston A. Price Foundation has been around for a little over 20 years now, and it's been over 15 years that Michael Pollan wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma, probably the two major places where people learned what grass-fed beef is. And so we know now what it is. We know the term, and like I said, great starting point, but there are many ways that we need to go beyond. I think one of the biggest things is for farmers not just to feed the cows a 100% grass diet, but do the crop rotation and really be practicing regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, beyond that, you have hormones, you have antibiotics being used in conventional cows to pump them up, make them basically bigger. And then, of course, there's also talk that the mRNA vaccine is being used in cattle. I've talked to farmers, though, and ranchers, and they have said it's more just rumor that it's not being used. It doesn't mean it won't be later on, but that my understanding is that it's not being used. It's going to be progressively something. You cannot fall asleep at the cart. That's what I say when you go grocery shopping. And even in the future, we have to continue to vote for label laws, things like that, because it's not going to get easier. It's going to get harder to decipher what it is we're eating, particularly when they're passing laws that they can now farm feed and not tell you what the fish is being fed, for example. It could be getting soy and corn. You don't know it. Things like that. They're now doing laboratory made meat. My understanding is that they don't actually even have to label it that it's laboratory made meat. They're doing stuff with pigs and fish that sound really scary. And my understanding is that they also don't need to make claims around what they're doing. So it's going to get more and more confusing. And the solution that I look at is that we're just going to either have to grow our own, or we're going to have to go to farmers markets and really get to know your local farmer better and really source there.
Yes. In regards to the mRNA vaccines, Alex Miller of Lick Skillet Farms, who's been on this program, and he spoke at the Wise Traditions Conference, he said that currently mRNA, at least in the U.S., and I don't think in any other country, haven't been approved to be administered to farm animals, but like you said, could be a thing in the future. And it's also now a lot more people want cows that weren't given any type of vaccine at all.
Yeah. Once again, that's going to be hard to find, because it's the same thing with antibiotics. You don't know. Like sometimes a farmer will be feeding, raising them just exactly the way you want them to be, but then the cow gets sick and they need an antibiotic for whatever reason. So it's never as clean as you think it is, but it's also not necessarily as bad. It's all about picking and choosing and finding the right source. Once again, I always default to the more local, the better, the more accessible that source is to you, where you can go visit it, talk to the person. I don't see a world where we're going to be able to truly have transparency unless that is happening.
Yes. I once heard someone say the only way you truly know something is organic is you grow it yourself. And it's the same with animals. The only way you truly know that it's 100% grass-fed is you raise it yourself. Or if you can't do that, if you don't have the acreage, the property, go visit the farm.
Yeah, and purchase an animal share, beef share, or something like that, because I think that's still one of the best solutions towards getting a more affordable product, and then also making sure that it's really clean. There's this guy that I know, Jake Steaks. He literally goes across the U.S. and he'll deliver people meats from cow to pork, and he goes to the farms and he picks the cow for you.
Wow.
And he'll divide it up based on the family. It's pretty incredible, but he curates it for you and makes sure that the cow is being raised properly. So there are some people building businesses around this transparency, but I just can't stress enough, it's not going to get easier. As we look to more modern ways of growing and breeding animal, it's gross where the industry goes, but it's just a reality. You know, here's one thing, it's like, and you know this going to Wise Traditions, it's hard to find really clean food when you eat out, right? Mm-hmm. It's virtually impossible. So you might be as clean and as integrated as you can in your own household. But if you eat like this and it matters to you and you want to be only eating things that are transparent, you're basically committing to never eating out ever because there is such a lack of transparency. Most of the meats that you find at any restaurant are not going to be the way you would probably want it to be. And if they are, you're spending a lot of money at that restaurant.
Yes, when you eat out, it becomes a whole different thing. And that actually happened at the Wise Traditions Conference when I went out to a restaurant that was recommended by the Weston A. Price Foundation of local restaurants in the area. But when looking at the menu, it didn't say everything clear. And I explained, since this is a lot of what I do, is I know how to read between the lines and look at the menu and tell what truly is sustainable versus what should be avoided. Like if I see something on the menu that says Wagyu, well, that's really just a feedlot scam, unless it's grass-fed Wagyu, but most likely when it just says Wagyu, that's something to avoid. And people had some other concerns too, because I know one person's concern, as you talk about local, when it said that the meat was from New Zealand, they were concerned about irradiation. Do you know much about that as far as imported meats being irradiated?
Not that I'm aware of, but then again, it's possible. It depends on how they're coming in, right? If they're coming in where they're wet, when they say irradiated, they're talking where it goes through an x-ray. You know what I mean? That's probably more the reality, is most stuff that's coming into any country is being checked for other things that people might be putting in there, making sure that there's no contraband or stuff like that. But I personally know that our stuff is not, because we get it. It's already freeze-dried and powdered. So it's already been processed. It's not wet. It's not a threat for contaminants in that way. But no, I haven't really heard much about that in terms. But see, I'm not dealing with wet meat, so I don't really know how that's coming in.
Right.
But to your point, people don't realize a lot of the meat you're buying in grocery stores is from other countries. It's not necessarily from here.
Yes. And I did a little research after someone asked that, after eating at the restaurant, as far as irradiation, because I've heard of it. And I think it's more than x-rays. I know there's been some push of food that's imported to basically radiate the food to take out, I don't know, whatever the US duh and the F duh thinks is danger in there, which is probably nothing. And I read that it's actually a very small percentage of any food, whether it's animals or crops, that are radiated. But it goes along with what you're saying about the mRNA, that even if it isn't being done now, it's a concern that that doesn't become a more common practice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing too is when we get product, for example, we have to third-party test it. We third-party test it when we receive it, and then we third-party test it when we package it. So just with us, it's getting tested twice. Of course, it has to be tested before it's sent to us as well. I'm curious about your response to this, since this is a passion of yours. Is how do you kind of navigate going too far down the rabbit hole? You know what I mean?
Because yes. Oh, yes. I deal with that all the time.
You know, you can spin out over all the details. For example, here's one that I only learned this just this summer. Okay. I did not know this. And I've been in the field a long time. And so I was shocked that I didn't know this. But so basically, my understanding is when you go to buy organic products, so if a product is certified organic, then you're guaranteed that it's not going to have glyphosate. Certain synthetic fertilizers are not going to be used when it's being grown. But I did not know that same organic legume, grain, certain crops that basically the industry dries, so it gets pulled from the field. They then dry it. Well, I did not know that they're drying it with glyphosate.
Ooh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, right? So this is not common knowledge. So even something that is labeled certified organic, they are certifying how it was grown, not how it was processed. So that means it can still be sprayed with glyphosate and it could still have glyphosate. So that means that we're all spending a lot more for organic produce, which I still think is worth it because the alternative tends to be toxic for many people. But that means we're spending a lot more thinking that we're getting a certain transparency. And then I'm now realizing that we're not. So when I hear stuff like that, I'm like, okay, what the hell is going on? So that means that most likely that's happening in other areas of our food system as well, where we think we're paying or getting one thing, but we're actually getting something else. And so that then begs the question, which I'm asking you, is how do you navigate not worrying about the little things so much that then it paralyzes you? Because if you really looked into everything, you'd probably never eat anything again.
Yes, very true. Yes. How I look at it as, I think it's a learning process that we're still in, and you got to first look at starting points, and then we look at ways to improve it. So organic, when it first came around, was definitely a great starting point, the way it opened us up to things. But we're learning now about the flaws of organic, and we're looking now for newer terms. And it's the same thing with meat, with grass-fed, pasture-raised. That was a start, but there are new things we're working with. And I'm not against labels, but certainly there are some meaningless labels. You have to have the right labels. So there's a couple that we need with beef. One is one that we had and they did away with, which is the country of origin laws. I think that's a very important thing that we need to reinstate.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, because that dictates a lot. The regulations of in one country, they might both say organic, but they might have completely different regulations for what that means.
Also, I think an important thing is regenerative. We're hearing a lot of that. There's certainly a lot of confusion as to what regenerative is. And I'm for the idea of regenerative certification. There's a lot of different regenerative programs. It's about choosing the right one. I'm very partial to Savory Institute Land to Market. And I was wondering, what are your thoughts on some of these regenerative certification programs that we're seeing?
Yeah, they're only as good as they do, right? To your point that sometimes we start with the best intentions and then eventually something changes. I think the ones that we're seeing right now are absolutely great. The question then becomes, well, once now everyone starts moving towards regenerative, can we still trust those regulations or those approvals? Because I know, for example, when I was first creating Pluck, I was looking for a kitchen to work out of. And I was originally going to work with a gluten-free baker because our product is gluten-free. And he straight up told me, he'd been in the business for 16 years. He told me, we're certified gluten-free, but it's meaningless because the guy who certifies us, he comes in, he doesn't even walk into the warehouse. He comes to the table. He says, hey, how you doing? Here's my paperwork. Can you sign it? I sign it. And then he leaves. So how do we know? It's really only as good as the certification program. And there definitely are some that are good. I just think as manufacturers that we need to make sure there's checks and balances for everyone. We all need to hold each other accountable. So if I'm getting certification, then I need to make sure they're really certifying, like truly, that's my job. It's also their job, but it's my job to make sure that they're doing their job so that I can sufficiently tell people, hey, yeah, this is certified, whatever it is, and do it with a healthy conscience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's important to choose the right certifier because there's a lot of ones who really don't do a lot. I certainly know about some things with the meat inspection that goes on with the USDA, and that's why there's the push now for the Prime Act.
Right. And to your point, though, some of these certifications are questionable. It's still the case, but a lot of farms still won't get certified organic. And it has nothing to do with whether they are organic or not. A lot of them are better than organic, but they're small farms. They don't want to pay that huge price. And they don't have someone on staff who can just do all the paperwork constantly because there's so much paperwork associated with it. So sometimes these terms are meaningless depending on where you're shopping. You know what I mean? If you're going to a regular grocery store, then yeah, I think they're not meaningless. But if you're going to your local farmer's market and the farm that you're buying from is one you've been to and you know, and you've talked to the person and they're small enough where you feel like they're in an integrity that you believe what they're saying, and they say, hey, we're not doing this, then I think you can trust that. You got to follow your own instincts with it. But a lot of those farms will not be certified organic, but they will be way better than the ones that you see in the store.
Certainly. Like for instance, Joel Salatin's Polyface Farms, he uses the term beyond organic. And that's part of a political thing, as he's a libertarian. He's not a big fan of government certifications. And this is an issue of government certification versus private certifications. I think it's interesting that with organic, it was really the government one that caught on first. And I don't think it has anything to do with that being a better program, or I think they were just the ones to do it first. But government is more hesitant now with regenerative. So with regenerative, we're seeing private organizations do it. Of course, I know some farmers who, even the private certifications, some farmers don't want to take part. It does mean more money to have to spend on a certification, whether it be from a private entity or a government entity?
Yeah. You know, when I was first starting out and I was looking into some of these certifications, some of them, so you had to pay for the certification for that year, and then you're having to re-up every single year. And then some of them wanted to take some of your sales. So some of them were just a flat rate. And then others were like, well, it's a rate, but then also if you're selling a certain amount, once you start using our certification reel, I think Whole30 used to be like this, I think. I don't know if they still are, but they were actually wanting a percentage of your sales. And it's like, that's insane to me. And I know that from their thought, they're thinking, well, but more people are buying your product because it has our seal on it. But I think people forget, like, the margins on food products are very low. That's why we have less people becoming farmers. The return on being a farmer is nothing. You have to love it. You know what I mean? So I think anyone that's trying to take money from farmers or take money from Whole Food or real food manufacturers, we're just questioning it. There's not much money to take.
Yes, that was what Alex Miller's talk was about at the conference and on my podcast, people not wanting to go into farming. And if you haven't heard that, I recommend both listening to my podcast interview with him and also purchasing through Fleetwood On Site his talk, because that is a major issue that we're facing of young people not wanting to go into farming and seeing less small local farms as a result of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to potentially create a scary future where we're dependent on big ag for our food because there's not enough smaller farms doing things differently. People talk about wars and all that. And of course, there's stuff going on right now. But I believe it's agriculture that's going to either be our downfall. That's where we should be putting a lot of focus, in my judgment, really making sure that we are growing animals and food in a way that will best enable us to survive in the long run, because it's questionable. The future of our agriculture systems and our animals, they're at risk, huge risk.
They are. The agriculture's at risk as well. As a side, we're at risk for health as far as the standard American diet and people eating that. And that's where you and I come in with offering healthier food and pushing for eating local.
That's definitely a mission. Absolutely. I say this a lot, but I believe organ meats can save the world. And so what I mean by that is I'll say most of us are nutrient deficient, as I said before. And how we feel on the inside is how we treat people on the outside. Like if you're constantly in chronic illness, you're not going to be a very happy person. You're not going to treat people with kindness usually because you're in so much pain, right? Or sometimes you're angry because you came off balance chemically. There's lots of things going on when you're nutrient deficient. But if I can support you in getting nutrients sufficient and I can help you to feel better in your body, then hopefully you start treating other people better. And then now we have a better world. When we have a world full of people that instead of are at opposition, but are actually just listening to each other and okay with being not agreeing on something, but are okay still treating each other with respect, even though you disagree, that's a new world.
Absolutely. And you have a great product with that, with your pluck, which I know comes in different flavors, as obviously people have different tastes. So let's talk a little about the different varieties you currently have of pluck seasonings.
So we use Redmond Real Salt for our salt. And then we have spices and herbs. And we have three that have the salt and the herbs. One is called Original, which is really like an all-purpose, very similar to Lowry's or Old Bay flavor. And then we have a spicy mild. And then we have a zesty garlic. The zesty garlic has no nightshades and no seeds. So what we call autoimmune protocol friendly. So that's something I did for a lot of my Weston A. Price friends who don't eat nightshades or seeds. We have a fourth product though, that is just the organ meats. It's called Pure. And the reason we came out with that is the three with the seasonings are very much more savory. And we wanted something that people could add to sweet things, to savory things, that had more flexibility for those that wanted to be more versatile with it. We know people that put the Pure in their beverages, like their smoothies, people that put it in brownies, put it in coffee. So it's really, really flexible. It's got a neutral flavor, but as long as the thing you're adding it to has flavor, no one will know that it's in there. So those are our four products right now. We have larger bags coming out soon. In the new year, we'll have an even spicier blend. So we're calling it Spicy AF.
Love the name.
Yeah. And then in 2024, we're focusing on getting into more retail. That's going to be a main push. And then we're also working on getting pluck used in other snack products. We're in talks with a chip company right now, a popcorn company, sprouted nuts. It's already in a product called Carnivore Bar, which is a pemmican bar.
Yes, which exhibited at Wise Traditions with you.
Yep. Philip and his wife, they are already putting pluck in their product and they've got some really great products. And then we're also selling our products in collaboration with other companies. So Dr. Cowan's Garden, who is also at Wise Traditions, They sell our product in their jars. It's about three times our small pouches, but it's our product that they're selling. So we're really looking for B2B, more retail, but we're excited to provide these nutrients to people in other forms or in other ways, just to make things even easier for them.
I'm excited about the spicy AF. I can handle pretty spicy stuff, so I think that would be up my alley. Any other flavors that you're working on?
Have you had Carolina Golds, those peppers yet?
No.
Okay. Because as I'm creating Spicy F, I'm exploring what pepper do I add.
Ghost pepper, maybe?
Yeah, that's probably what we're going to do. But there's a few directions you can go. But I was at one conference and the people were telling me about Carolina Golds, which I think it's a South Carolina pepper. And they said it's the hottest pepper around. Even the ghost pepper puts it to shame.
Oh, I know there have been a number that have topped the ghost pepper because they keep coming up with hotter peppers. So
yeah,
I know the ghost pepper is maybe 10th down or something now.
Yeah, it's crazy because habanero used to be so high and now that's considered light for a lot of people. I think that's crazy.
Right. It's interesting that habanero's seen middle to low on the list. Are you working on any other flavors for those that maybe aren't into all the spicy foods?
We're going to probably keep it at bay with those four flavors and then the pure. And then we'll do other flavors when we launch the other species. So when we do poultry, we'll probably do some lemongrass flavor. We'll expand on the flavors then. But for the most part, we want to just grow the lineup that we have right now and just help. Because anyone that's tasted them, they're pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that because of the feedback we've gotten. As a chef, I really focused on flavor. And I put flavor first. So it's hitting two marks that are very important to me when I support people with eating healthy food, which is it's got to be easy and it's got to be delicious. And Pluck definitely hits both of those because I believe when you hit both of them that you can create evergreen health products, products that people will use ongoing in any state because they're easy and they're delicious. But if you only have one, then I think you limit how long someone will use your product. If it's easy, it doesn't taste good, no one's going to do it that long.
And do you see yourself expanding into other types of products, maybe outside of seasonings or even organ meats?
Definitely. The mission is to be whole animal, to really to help people get every part of the animal as easy and deliciously as possible. So we see ourselves creating beverage products, more actual finished products, so bars and snack foods that people can take with them. And then I do have an idea for some things down the road. I have an idea for a vegan entry point, and it's just a different way to get certain things. Once again, I like flavor a lot, so I want to do stuff with some cultured product. It's like fermented vegetables, but not in a wet form, but in more of a dry form. So I'm experimenting with that stuff, but it's going to be probably a couple of years till we do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that goes back to what we were saying earlier, because I was saying you have stuff not so much for the vegans, but it turns out you actually are working on products for vegans, but certainly healthy ones. You're not working on any of the fake meat or that. You're for real plant-based foods.
Yeah, I come at everything very much from that wise tradition. I want it to either be cultured, fermented, whole animal. I'm looking for that sprouted. Those are all very important to me. We're seeing a lot of people right now attack vegetables and whatnot. They're saying, oh, this is not something you should be eating. But once again, going back to Bill Schindler, he also agrees with this. We both talk about in this way that it's not that these products are inherently bad for you. They're just bad for you in that form. But if you take, let's say cabbage. Yeah, if you eat raw cabbage, it's not going to be very healthy for you. You're not going to be able to absorb the nutrients very well. It's going to probably create a lot of digestive distress. However, if you ferment that cabbage, culture it, you're going to help break it down. You're going to make the minerals and vitamins that are in the cabbage more bioavailable. You're even going to add new ones when you culture it. And then it's more easily digested. So we can use the power of our brain to utilize these foods that wouldn't be healthy in their current form, but we can make them healthier by sprouting them or culturing them. And that's the kind of stuff that I believe doesn't involve a trend. This is ancestral. This is how our ancestors did it. And we just need to utilize maybe modern techniques to help get it into people's lives. Because the reality is most people are not going to ferment their own vegetables or do these things. In many ways, they may not even buy cultured vegetables because they're icked out by that. So if I can somehow get the same effect, but in a different form, just like we are doing with whole animal, then I think we're on to something.
Yeah, certainly the issue more with vegetables is how they're prepared, just like meat. It's really the same thing. And it's the same thing with grains and nuts and legumes. It's really all about how they're prepared. And I do think we need different types of ferments. I love sauerkraut and I love all the companies out there doing it right. But there has been so much of a focus on just sauerkraut, and there's plenty more types of fermented vegetables that really the market needs to open up to.
Absolutely. Yeah. We get very tunnel focused on very specific ways of doing things. And that's as much as you see in the industry. I think that's why I was so excited when I created Pluck that we haven't had an innovation around the spice aisle forever. The only innovation that's happened in the spice aisle is the sourcing of salt. That's it. But it's still salt. It's just different salts from this ocean versus that ocean, or it's sun-dried versus something else. But it's really, there haven't been any innovations in there. So I was really excited when I came up with this because I was like, oh, first of all, it's not a laboratory-made product. So it's two ingredients that are found in nature. I'm combining them in a way that no one else has combined them. But ultimately, what I'm trying to show people is like, hey, your seasonings can taste good, but they can also give you more nutrients. We can utilize these modern techniques of preservation, which freeze drying is, and we can get these things in our bodies without swallowing them in a capsule form, but get them in a food form. We just have to get inventive on how we're going to get them in, whether it's a seasoning or it's already infused in the product, whatever it is. But I believe there's further to go.
There is. That's something I think is a newer thing that we're seeing is new types of seasoning blends and stuff. As you talked about, you're carried on Dr. Cowan's garden. And I would say certainly their garden powders are a different way, which we've seen an innovation in the spice and the seasoning world. But there's still, I think, a lot more that we can see.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We're just about out of time. But before we go, let the listeners know where they can find more information about Pluck online, on the web and on social media.
So we have a website at eatpluck.com. We have recipes on that site, lots of really great recipes from lots of different chefs that I've curated over the years. You can purchase there. We are also available on Amazon, and you can also find us on social media. Most of them, the handle is at eatpluck, except for TikTok, we're at eat_pluck because the eat pluck was taken for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Wonderful. There's where you can taste the Pluck seasonings. James, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me, Aaron. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. That's all for this episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. New episodes of the show are released every Wednesday. Follow me on social media for more information on the next episode. And to make sure you never miss any of my podcasts, subscribe to The Appropriate Omnivore on your favorite podcast site or app. You can also listen to all my podcasts on my website, appropriateomnivore.com. There you can find recipes from the guests I interview, plus all of my articles covering lifestyles in the world of real food. Until next time, my pantry is officially closed.